Thank you, Mr. Seeker. Today I'd like to talk about hospitality. That's the title of my sermon, Striking the Balance, a lesson from Mary and Martha regarding hospitality. Changed it a little bit from last week. I found an article that was written actually by Leanne Luker regarding hospitality. It was in a several years ago Good News Magazine article. And the title of it was The Disappearing Art of Hospitality. One of the quotes that she talked about, she says, "Hospitality is well on its way out, but understanding what hospitality is and isn't may help you recapture the spirit of hospitality." She then goes on to say that in much of the Western world, talking about our country, hospitality is becoming a losing art. The pressure of so many demands on time, on finances, often leads us to view hospitality as a luxury rather than a necessity. Mr. Kester talked about the demands on time, always looking to go to the express lane. You have 15 items, the sign says 12, you're pretty close, I got to get going. So we're always constantly looking for time. Time is of the essence. It's a rat race. We live life in the fast lane. So she says the pressure and demands of time and finances often causes us not to be hospitable. Yet if we read from the Bible all the way from Genesis through Revelation, hospitality is a frequent underlying theme. One of the earliest accounts of hospitality in the Bible can be found in Genesis 18. We'll turn there and read the account in Genesis 18. Beginning in verse 1, we read about two aspects of hospitality in Genesis 18:1. Number one, providing for the washing of your guests' feet. And the second one, providing a meal. So reading in verse 1, it says, "The Lord appeared to Abraham near the great trees of Mamre, while he was sitting at the entrance to his tent in the heat of the day." Hot out there today. "Abraham looked up and saw three men standing nearby. When he saw them, he hurried from the entrance of his tent to meet them and bowed low to the ground, greeting them. He said, 'If I have found favor in your eyes, my Lord, do not pass your servant by. Let a little water be brought, and then you may all wash your feet and rest under this tree. Let me go and get something to eat, so you can be refreshed, and then go on your way, now that you have come to your servant.' 'Very well,' they answered. They said, 'Do as you say.'" In verse 6, it says, "So Abraham hurried into the tent to Sarah. 'Quick,' he said, 'get the finest flour and knead it, and bake some bread.' Then he ran to the herd and selected a choice, tender calf, and gave it to his servant, who hurried to prepare it. He then brought some curds of milk and the calf that had been prepared, and set these before them. While they ate, he stood near them under the tree." So here we see that some men passing by Abraham, he invited them into the house, into the tent, where he prepared a meal, allowed them to wash his feet. What some people think of hospitality is actually entertaining, and Mrs. Luker talks about that later in her article, but hospitality is not entertaining. It's not a planned event, necessarily. In this case, I don't know that Abraham knew that these three men were going to come by, but when they did, he invited them in, offered to wash their feet, prepared a meal for them. It wasn't a planned event. True hospitality is an attitude of service. True hospitality is an attitude of service. Abraham invited them into his home where he and his wife Sarah acted with an attitude of service. For some, hospitality becomes naturally. It's just what we do. Others must learn it. And Mrs. Luker in her article says, to be Christian, we must practice it. A couple of weeks ago, most of you know obviously, but a couple of weeks ago we arrived at services as we always do, ready to set up. This particular week we would be listening to a transmission from the Buffalo congregation via the internet back here to the Elmira building. So as Lori and Jackson, Mason and I were traveling from our house, we were about a mile away, and we got a phone call from Brian. He said, "Do you and Lori have a key to the church building?" I said, "Yeah, we have a key to the church building. It's in the truck." See, the problem was this day, we didn't bring the truck. We brought the car. So we were only about a mile away. So we turned around. We drove back to the house. We picked up the key. And continued to drive to the church building. The problem with the key was the Lamberts were in Atlanta. They have one key. Mrs. Anita Strange was in Florida. She had the other key. The Kesters were in Toronto. They had a third key. And Lori and I had the fourth key. So we thought. So when we arrived, the majority of the members were standing outside the door that we come through. So I kind of walked over there. And as I was walking over, I said hello to two gentlemen that I didn't recognize. I handed Bryant the key. He attempted to open the door. Didn't work. He asked me, he says, "Do you have the new key?" So I don't know. I handed him the key. I looked on the back. It said 2010 on the keychain. I said, "Well, it's not really new, I guess." He said, "Well, they changed locks on the doors about 6 months ago." I said, "Well, I guess we have a bit of a problem, don't we? I have a key, but it's not going to work." So after discussing several options, without experiencing any success, he tried many different doors throughout the building, thinking maybe they didn't change all of the locks. So I was talking with Brian. I said, "Well, looks like we better load up the cars and head up to my house, because clearly we're not getting into this building." So that's what we did. He basically called Mr. Lambert in Buffalo and said, "We have a problem here. Is it all right if we go up to Ron and Lori's house and have services there?" Mr. Lambert said, "Yep," and said he'll postpone services for about 30 minutes. So we proceeded to our house, quickly got set up, and the two gentlemen that I didn't recognize, they came with us. It turns out, and we know their names now, so Mr. Packer and Mr. Pitcher, they had been watching Mr. Lambert on the internet for some time, and this was going to be the first week that they attended services. So the services we conducted from Buffalo 30 minutes later than typical went off without any further glitches. And then, as we always do, after services, Lori and I set up for lunch and the brethren fellowshipped. The two gentlemen, Mr. Pitcher and Packer, didn't stay for lunch. They politely thanked me for opening up my house and for my hospitality. I didn't really think anything of it. I said, "No, you're welcome. You're welcome to come back anytime. We appreciate you coming to services." And then later, Lori and I were talking, and the topic came up, and we were saying, "Man, what a mess. What an impression it must have made on our two guests that, you know, this church, I've been watching them on the internet, see Johnny speaking. I finally decide to come to services, and they can't even get in their building. What kind of church is this? What did we choose?" So, you know, what kind of impression did it make? And Lori had said, you know, they made a comment to me as well. And the comment was that, Lori said, "You know, normally we're not this disorganized, and, you know, we appreciate your patience, and we thank them for coming." And one of them, and I can't remember which one she said, made the comment that, you know, how they were impressed with our Christian attitude. And, again, didn't really think much of it. And they said, "You know, it would have been just as easy to cancel services, but that you had the Christian attitude to, you know, kind of rearrange and invite us into your house and continue on with services." I never really thought about offering our home for services as an act of hospitality or really having a Christian attitude. I was just solving a problem. That's what I do. All day long, there's problems. They come to me, I solve them. So, you know, the building's locked. We solved the problem. Can't get in here. Let's go someplace else. So that's really all I was thinking at the time. I really wasn't thinking of what we did as having a Christian attitude or being hospitable. It's just solving the problem. Mrs. Luker in her article refers to hospitality as an act of service that is reflective of a Christian attitude. See, I hadn't seen it when we offered that. Mr. Pitcher and Mr. Packer did. They saw that what we did was having a Christian attitude, an attitude of service, and an act of hospitality. As I was trying to come up with a topic for the split sermon, I began thinking about kind of the conversations that we had. That, you know, I didn't see the hospitality, I didn't see the Christian attitude, just something we did, we solved the problem. So I began thinking about, well, maybe I should do a little research on hospitality. So that's what I did. The word hospitality comes from two Latin root words, actually. And some of the derivatives of the word hospitality is hospital and hospice. These words simply imply care, sustenance, and shelter. Now, entertaining, which some people will confuse with hospitality, it's a little bit different. When you think think of entertaining somebody, what do you think? Well, the house has to be just right. You got to have the flowers on the tables. You got to have the nice tablecloths. You got to bring out the good dishes and the good silverware. You got to shine it up. Everything's got to be just so. That's entertaining. It's not hospitality. See, hospitality is not entertaining. It's not a planned for event as we saw in Genesis. It's a spur of the moment thing, which is what happened that day that we were locked out of the building. True hospitality is an attitude of service. It's the desire to confer care and concern on others. As I thought about the word hospitality, I began to think about examples from the Bible other than Genesis 18 that would display or portray what true hospitality is. And as I began looking around, looking on UCG's website, looking at some of the Good News articles, looking at some of the Beyond Today programs, one of the stories kept coming up over and over, and that was the story of Mary and Martha. We know that Mary and Martha, they were two sisters from the town called Bethany, which sat on the eastern side of the Mount of Olives. It was situated about 2 miles from Jerusalem, and it was the final station between a road between Jericho and Jerusalem. That's kind of where they lived. Mary and Martha, they were sisters, and they lived with their brother Lazarus. The gospel records that Jesus felt comfortable in the home of Mary and Martha and their brother. The four weren't just acquaintances. They were close friends. Reading in the account in John chapter 11, we'll turn there, in John chapter 11, beginning in verse 1, we can start to get a sense that Jesus, Mary, Martha, and Lazarus were not just acquaintances. They truly were close friends, and they did share a love for one another. So reading in John 11, verse number 1, it says, "Now a certain man was sick. That man was named Lazarus of Bethany, the town where Mary and her sister Martha lived." We drop down to verse 3. We read about the love that Jesus had for Lazarus. "Therefore, his sisters," talking about Mary and Martha here, "sent unto him, saying, Lord, behold, he whom you love is sick." If we drop down to verse 5, it says, "Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister Lazarus." Jesus was distraught over the death of Mary and Martha's brother. He told his disciples that he was going to go to Judea. At this proclamation, the disciples said this in verse 8. His disciples say unto him, "Master, the Jews of late sought to stone you there. And you want to go there again?" So last time Jesus traveled that way, he was on the verge of being stoned. So when he told his disciples that he was going to go and meet Mary and Martha and check on his friend Lazarus, they said, "Why do you want to do that? Last time you went there, you were almost stoned." In verse 11, it says, "These things said he, and after that he saith unto them, Our friend is asleep, but I go that I may wake him out of a sleep." Jesus didn't fear for his safety, nor was he concerned over the prior threat of being stoned. He was concerned for his friend. He was concerned for the brother of Mary and Martha. He showed a true love for the three of them. Dropping all the way down to verse 33 in John 11, we can begin to understand that the true love that Jesus had for his friends, he wept over the death of Lazarus and the weeping of his friend Mary. So picking up that account in verse 33, it says, "When Jesus therefore saw her," again referring to Mary, "saw her weeping and the Jews also weeping, which he came with her, he groaned in the spirit and he was troubled." Well, certainly we're upset when we see death, but are you truly troubled when it's just somebody that you knew? Just somebody that you may have seen once in a while down the street. See, it was different with Jesus because he was true friends with the three of them. In verse 34, he said, "Where have you laid him?" They said unto him, "Lord, come and see." And when he got there in verse 35, it said, Jesus wept. Jesus was at ease. We read accounts in the Bible where he was at ease when he was at the house of Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. Their home at Bethany, just outside of Jerusalem, might have been considered Jesus' home away from home. You ever stop to think, where would you consider your home away from home? Where is the place that you feel comfortable when you're not at home? Is it Grandma's house? For Jackson and Mason, that's probably the answer. They have two sets of grandmas, and actually Jackson said, Dad, you're going to have to cut that a couple pages short today because we're going swimming after services. So he feels comfortable at Grandma's house. Is it a sibling's house? Maybe it's a brother or sister. Maybe it's the home of a church friend that makes you feel at home when you go to visit. Whatever place you choose is your home away from home, what is it about visiting that place that makes you feel comfortable? Is it the fresh baked cookies? Is it the pie that's ready when you come to visit? Is it the ice cold lemonade, tea, beer on a hot day? Be nice today. Maybe it's the warming, inviting kitchen that you sit around at and have conversation. Which reminds me, Mr. Dave Farnham stopped by to pick up Tina. She came in on the bus last night. She spent the night with us. It was nice to see her, Tina Banda. Most of you know her, our friend from Zambia. Can't remember if it's Zambia or Zimbabwe, but she visited last night, had dinner with us, and then Dave Farnham picked her up for services this morning. And he came in and he had a hot cup of coffee with us, sat around the table and had a nice conversation. He wanted me to bring greetings from him and pass that along to all of you. But again, we invited him in, said, you know, have a seat. He was 30, 40 minutes early, so we had some time to have a cup of coffee and have conversation. So all of the treats, the drinks, the comfortable seating arrangements, they're nice. But is that why we go and visit somebody? Would all of the treats, the drinks, the snacks, the comfortable seating, would it be the same if the person that you came to see spent their entire time preparing that for you, rather than having conversation or sitting around the table with you? Typically, when we go to visit, we go for the conversation. We go for the fellowship. Those things together is the hospitality. We don't go for the dinner, although it's nice. We don't necessarily go for the snacks and the drinks, although it's nice. Hospitality means providing the drinks, the snacks, the conversation. But we need to remember the important aspects of hospitality. We understand from reading in 1 Peter verse 4, 1 Peter verse 4, we'll turn there. We understand by reading that hospitality is basically service for one another. So in 1 Peter 4 verse 8, it says, above all, love each other deeply, because love covers over a multitude of sins. Offer hospitality to one another without grumbling. Offer hospitality to one another without grumbling. If we think back to Genesis, Abraham invited the three men into his house. He asked his wife Sarah to prepare a meal. Nowhere in that account did you hear where either one of them complained about it. They offered their home to him. They offered the service of feeding them, washing their feet, and they did so without grumbling. In verse 10, it says, each of you should use whatever gift you have received to serve others as faithful stewards of God's grace in its various forms. God has given us each different gifts that we can use in the act of hospitality. My gift is not cooking. That's Lori's. So when we have people over, she does the cooking. I'll do the cleaning, setting up of the table, preparing the house to get it ready. That's more of my gift. I'm a get-it-done type of person. Drives Lori crazy. But we can learn a lesson in hospitality from the visit that Jesus had with Mary and Martha at their home in Bethany. In John chapter 12, beginning in verse 1, this is where a visit that he made to his three friends' home is recorded. So John chapter 12 and verse 1. It says, 6 days before the Passover, 6 days before the Passover, Jesus came to Bethany, where Lazarus lived, with whom Jesus had raised from the dead. Here, a dinner was given in Jesus' honor. Here we see that providing a meal is certainly part of being hospitable. But if we read further, beginning in verse 2, we see where acting as a servant and simply sitting with the guests is also part of hospitality. In verse 2, it says, Martha served. Martha served. She was in the kitchen slaving away. She served while her brother was among those reclining at the table with him. So sister's in there cooking away, and her brother's in there having conversation with Jesus. In another account of the events at Mary and Martha's, we see where listening to our guests is also important. So a similar account in Luke 10, verse 38, it says, as Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. Martha, again, invited them in. She had a sister called Mary who sat. Mary sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. So we have four people in the home, at least according to this account. One is cooking away, working in the kitchen. Her brother and sister are chatting it up with their guest. As Lazarus and Mary were sitting with Christ and listening to him speak, Martha was working and preparing the meal. Preparing the meal is hard work. Certainly could become frustrating, especially when you're doing it all and the other ones are reclining, relaxing, chatting it up. You could see where it would be easy to become a little bit bitter. But remember in 1 Peter 4 what we are instructed to do. Be hospitable without grumbling. Remember, Martha's going to be grumbling here in just a minute. We'll read that. But remember who invited Jesus into the home. Martha didn't follow the instructions in 1 Peter and came to Christ in Luke 10, verse 40. And here's what Martha did in Luke 10, verse 40. But Martha was distracted by all of the preparations that had to be made. She may have been thinking about entertaining versus being hospitable. We don't know. But she came in to him and asked, Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do all this work by myself? Could you imagine? Lord, don't you care that she left me to do all this work by myself? Here's where it gets even better. Tell her to help me. Tell her to help me. Could you imagine? Going to your guest that you invited in, being upset because your brother and sister are chatting it up, and you go to the guest and say, Lord, tell her to help me. I mean, any guest that would be bad, but going to Jesus Christ who you invited into your house and saying, Lord, tell my sister to help me. Can't imagine. I wish I had the patience of Jesus. I am so far from that, it's not even funny. Hopefully I'm getting closer. More sermons like Mr. Kester's will help, certainly. But I wish I had the patience that he had when dealing with this conflict. Here's how Christ replied when Martha came and demanded that he tell Mary to go and help her. So in Luke 10, still just dropping down one verse to 41, Jesus says this, Martha, Martha, the Lord answered, you are worried and upset about many things. Martha, Martha, you are worried and upset about many things. And I don't know how he said it. I'm assuming he said it with a common, soothing voice. But few things are needed, or indeed only one. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her. So as you read that, you think, well, what could be better than preparing a meal for Jesus Christ? What could be better than that? What did Mary have that Martha needed? What was the good part that Mary chose? What was Jesus speaking about here? And why will that good part never be taken away from Mary? It will remain with her forever. When we visit friends and relatives, we have a good idea of how they think and act. We know the people that we're visiting. Jesus was no different. He appreciated the differences among his three friends, and he felt comfortable enough to offer some constructive criticism or constructive advice on what the priorities could be. Mary and Martha had different views on life, just as many of us do as well. What can we learn about the views, and what do we need to strike the balance between what we see in Mary and what we see in Martha? Martha's words and actions depict her as a practical and efficient. Lori would tell you, I am Martha. I am practical and I am efficient. If there's a job to do, we get it done. It's like that day at church. The door doesn't open. Sitting around talking about it's not going to fix the problem. Get in the car. Let's go up to our house. I'm practical. I Well, I don't know if I'm always practical. I'm efficient. Nothing's wrong with being practical and efficient. Again, I may be a little bit biased because that's me, but truthfully, is there anything wrong with being practical and efficient? Lori will tell you that I tend to be too practical at times and too efficient at times. She'll be cooking away like Martha, and I'll be putting stuff away behind her. The problem is I put stuff away at times before she's actually done with it. What'd you do with this spice? What'd you do with that spice? Where's my spoons? So it's in the dishwasher. I'm not done with those. So we're different. I'm a little bit too efficient at times. Martha appears to be the leader and the more hospitable and social of the two. She was the one who invited Jesus into the house. She was the one that was preparing the meal. So at the outset, it looks as though Martha was the one that was probably a little bit more hospitable. Martha didn't suggest to Jesus that he ask Mary to help her. She told him, "Tell Mary to help me." Martha put on the onus of responsibility for serving a meal, which was to her was the most important part of hospitality. She put that responsibility for telling Mary to do it, not on herself. She didn't go. She asked Jesus to do it. Martha was fretting over something quite important to her. Preparing that meal was important to her. Providing a meal for Jesus Christ and his disciples, that was important to her. And she thought she was being hospitable. But how important was it compared to what we see in Mary? So let's look at how Mary behaved when Jesus came to visit. In John chapter 12, going back to John chapter 12, in verse 3, here's what it says about how Mary treated Jesus when he came to their home. In verse 3, it says, "Then Mary took a pint of pure nard," which was an expensive perfume. "She poured it on Jesus' feet and wiped his feet with her hair. And the house was filled with the fragrance of perfume." John emphasizes here that Mary was so humble and convicted and dedicated that she spared no expense. She spared no expense. She took a very, very expensive perfume and washed the feet of Jesus with that perfume. Now, typically what would have happened is you would have used water. And not only did she wash with expensive perfume rather than water, then typically you would offer some sort of a cloth to dry the feet. She didn't do that either. She used her hair. We know, brethren, from the Passover service that the act of washing one another's feet is an act of humility and an act of service. So Mary was providing a service for her guest. Mary not only washed his feet with that expensive perfume, but she used her hair, really showing her humility and her service and her Christian attitude. This attitude and outlook and perspective is the kind of approach God desires in all of his disciples. Jesus highly regarded Mary's approach. Mary and Martha both made a conscious choice with their actions that day that Jesus visited their home. See, Martha felt that the preparation of the meal, she felt that was the most important part of showing hospitality. While Mary, on the other hand, felt that it was important to demonstrate humility and service by washing his feet and then listening to Jesus as he spoke. Again, both are very important parts of hospitality. Remember that Jesus told Martha that Mary had made the better choice. Mary had made the better choice. In Luke 4, verse 4, we get a little insight of why he told Mary that she made the better choice. Remember, she was listening to Jesus Christ as he spoke. In Luke 4, verse 4, it says, "And Jesus answered him, saying, It is written that man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word of God." So although the meal was important, Mary knew that she was to listen. She was listening from Jesus Christ, his disciples with him. She was being taught. She knew that was important. Martha was worried about the physical preparation, but Mary understood the need to get prepared spiritually through listening to Jesus Christ. God's truth and laws will abide forever. We know that. Our bodies, they don't last forever. Mr. Seeker mentioned that. The talk of climbing mountains is now the talk of cataract surgeries, arthritis, and Our bodies wear down. They don't last forever, unfortunately. But our spirit bodies do. Our spirit bodies do. The spiritual knowledge that we accumulate in this life will be ours forever. It will not be taken away from us. But we must not allow the physical needs and the duties of hospitality to consume us. When we invite people into our homes, as Lori and I did that one particular day, and as many of you have as well, we need to remember that feeding our guests physical food, yes, it's important. It is important, and it's part of being hospitable. But the conversation and the fellowship is also important. I have a bad habit to be too much like Martha. After the meal, it drives me crazy to see dirty dishes all over. So rather than having conversation with the guests, I'll often go and clean up the kitchen. I need to stop doing that. That's not important. Throw the stuff in the sink, put a towel over it or something if it drives you nuts, and have conversation. Last night we had Michael and Linda over for dinner, and Tina was there, and I got better. I didn't clean the entire kitchen. It's probably only because I got thinking about my sermon, and I can't be hypocritical. Because if I continue to do that, that's exactly what I'm being. The conversation is important. Now, there's a need to clean up the dishes if you're going to have dessert or whatever. Nobody wants to eat with a mess around them. But we were outside. The kitchen's inside. We couldn't even see it. So I made Michael drink, went outside, and I cleaned it up after they left, and Tina and Lori were having a conversation. I could talk with them there. But again, that physical, the physical duties, are they the most important thing? Or is it that conversation? God wants us to serve one another. He wants us to invite people into our homes. He wants us to do it with a loving heart and without the grumbling. Martha was so consumed with the preparation of the meal that she allowed her attitude to become a little bit bitter towards her sister. And you could see that. You could see that. She got frustrated, and it boiled to the point where she didn't go to her sister directly. She went to Jesus Christ. Tell her to help me. She was frustrated. She was irritated. She got consumed by the physical duties of hospitality. Forgot about the conversation piece. So what began as a warm invite, remember, Martha invited Jesus Christ in. It began as a warm invite of hospitality. But she got so caught up with the chores of what she thought needed to be done that she became frustrated. Mary, on the other hand, she took the time to enjoy Jesus Christ's company. She served him through the humble act of washing his feet. She listened. She sat. They had conversation. See, both Mary and Martha wanted to serve and act as a hospitable host for their guests. They both wanted to do that. The thing is, we got to strike the balance between the physical preparation and then conversation, which is the key to really creating that enjoyable time for the people that we invite in. God does not ignore the need for physical work. We know, we read several places in the Bible where he wants us to work hard in life and do our best. But he wants our heart to be attuned to what is necessary. He wants us to recognize the crucial aspect of spiritual growth. And we know that we grow through fellowship with one another. Each of us needs to maintain the physical diligence of Martha. She was diligent, attaining to the physical needs. She was efficient, while having the spiritual discernment and focus of Mary. One of the Good News articles that I read through said, we need to have a Mary heart and Martha hands. And again, we go between those two things at times. Last week, we were driving to Buffalo, and typically, although I'm awful with directions, I usually do get lost, even if I do have directions, but I wasn't paying attention. I was having a conversation. I wasn't diligent to the need of getting from point A to point B, and drank a big Dunkin' Donuts coffee on the way up, and it was time to use the restroom. So we typically go to this one particular rest area. I said, well, I got to go to the bathroom, Lori. She goes, well, where's the rest area? Well, at the time that I passed the rest area, I didn't need to go yet. I figured I could make it. I said, I don't know. We passed that probably 10 miles ago. What do you mean we passed it 10 miles ago? We've missed our exit. She was acting like Martha. I was acting like Mary. I was having a conversation, having a good old time, talking with the boys. We're listening to church hymns, trying to pick them on the way up. And I completely missed the exit. And normally I would get bent out of shape about that. again, efficiency. We got to get it done. I said, well, find me another route. We'll get there. It's not a big deal. So we did. So we can shift between being a Mary and being a Martha. Again, it's striking the balance that is the key. The final scripture in Acts 2. Acts 2, verse 46. We are going to experience this very soon as we come to the close of this service. We know that every week we have a potluck after services. We enjoy each other's company. We enjoy each other's fellowship. In Acts 2, verse 46, it says, every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts. We know that every week we have the potluck. We look forward to that. You know, the spiritual message from up here is important. It's something that we do need to have. But a lot of times after services, when we're having conversation with people with like mind, we talk about the week, we talk about what's to come. That is spiritually rewarding. When you miss a service for being sick or whatever, that week is not the same because you're missing out on the breaking the bread with the brethren, the hospitality we have for each other. So unfortunately, in our church, we're spread out. We're all over the place. We don't always have that opportunity to have people into our homes. It's because of the rat race that we're in. We have all these things to do, the time demands. It's a struggle. But we can be hospitable to each other in this church building, which we do every single week. We break that bread here. We eat together with glad and sincere hearts. In verse 47 of Acts 2, it says, as we break that bread and we eat together with sincere hearts, we are to praise God and enjoy the favor of all the people. Brethren, let us show hospitality to one another. As we invite each other into our homes, or as we share hospitality here in the church building, let us do so willingly. Let us do so with a loving heart. Let us do so with a service, with an attitude of service, and without grumbling, as 1 Peter tells us. Let us praise God, brethren, and enjoy the favor of all people.